I actually got evaluations from the last week, just yesterday. So there were a number of questions and suggestions. And so I begin with answering your question. So when showing that some action is invariant under some transformation, we basically cancel the factors coming from the transformation with the measure of integration. The question is, since we have gone from integrating over x prime to x, what happens to the argument of the fields? Say we have phi of x prime, not phi of x. This doesn't change the equations of motion, though I'm worried this might change something. Well, maybe let me go more thoroughly through the, derivation of invariance of an action with respect to some transformations. And so let me take as an example lambda phi 4 theory and conformal and scale transformations. So here, this will be d mu phi squared minus lambda phi 4. Okay, so the claim is that this is invariant under phi going to omega minus 1 phi and x going to omega x. So what this really means is that if you substitute phi of x by omega minus 1 phi, and then we should also change the argument because the x has changed. And so the argument changes with the opposite transformation. Then we substitute this into the action. And we should see if it remains the same or not. So omega to the minus 4 okay, and then we can write this as integral over d omega minus 1x one half d phi of omega minus 1x over d omega minus 1x mu minus lambda, so here is 4, phi 4 of omega to the minus 1x. So this I can continue to, just by changing variables, I can bring it back to the original form. So I change variables to omega minus 1x. And so the action is invariant. Of course, the fields do change under these transformations, and that's important. So this is part of the So in the Noether theorem, when we derive it, it's necessary to take into account the change in the argument of the field that is that leads to some derivative terms in the generator of the transformation. So this is what it is. Yes.
Integrate over x before x, not before x prime, which is
the
omega.
So the statement of invariance of the action is that we take phi, apply it to its some transformation, and substitute into the action as the field variable. So then if by changing integration variables and relabeling, we can bring it back to the same form, the action is called invariant. So this is simply the definition.
Okay, so then the measure of integration doesn't change at first.
It doesn't change here.
Okay.
So we apply transformation only to the field. So you see that here I just substituted this omega expression instead of phi here and here.
And why doesn't it change? So you have, this is kind of S prime equals an integral of something that's prime.
By definition, so this is what we call, asymmetry transformation is some transformation on the fields. I would prefer some detailed discussion of the analytic properties of the S-matrix. Sorry to the person who wrote this. You are around 60 years late. So in the last 60 years, the S-matrix has been superseded by oscillators, Feynman diagrams, etc., etc. So we'll first have to study all of that. And then I hope I'll come to the definition of what is the S-matrix. So proof of the Noether theorem. So it's actually, it's in the textbook and in the notes. I don't want to spend time on that because it's kind of technical and will take some time. It was said that one does not need to be concerned about the energy of the vacuum being infinite, since it is possible to measure differences in energy. Is it still true in general relativity? No, it is not true in general relativity, and this is one of the big questions in theoretical physics. Why the vacuum energy is so small? How to compute the vacuum? So in principle, vacuum energy leads to a term in the Lagrangian that's called the cosmological term. Let me call it lambda, which is equal to, minus g. So it is equal to square root of minus g, and then just times a constant, lambda, which is called the cosmological constant. So the point is that when the metric is not flat, and so we include gravity, this becomes a real term in the Lagrangian, and we cannot exclude it. So without gravity, it's just a constant. It can be simply forgotten because the variation of this term will be equal to zero. But when we derive Einstein's equations, this term will contribute. And for instance, if we solve for the evolution of the universe, it will lead to an exponential expansion. And the fact is that universe does expand exponentially at present. And one can estimate what this cosmological constant is. So from present the expansion rate of the universe. We know that lambda so this lambda is the same as epsilon vacuum that we have computed. Is equal to 7.7 times 10 to the minus 43 GeV to the 4, which is an extremely small number. So this is provided that we associate the expansion of the universe with the cosmological constant, because there may be other mechanisms responsible for that. Now, let's try to estimate what we get in quantum field theory. So in quantum field theory, there will be, of course, many contributions, because each particle contributes vacuum and its own vacuum energy. So we can make just an estimate. So we can say that the vacuum energy is something like UV cutoff to the 4 divided by 16 pi squared. And so we can just substitute as a cutoff. I mean, this should be at least as small as the, yes?
Just a small question before. You say energy is equal to GeV to the 4.
This is the energy density, so it's energy per unit volume. And we measure volume in units, inverse to that of energy.
Yeah.
So this has dimension 4,
okay,
the energy density. So the cutoff is something that, I mean, it's some energy beyond which field theory doesn't work. So it should be at least as big as masses of particles that we know. So if you substitute for that, so this is should be bigger than mass of the particles that are known so far. So if we substitute the largest mass of the particle that we believe is elementary, which is the top quark, then we get something like, well, so top quark is 172 GeV. Pi squared, and it's not necessary to do any algebra, because you see that this is 50 orders of magnitude bigger. So how that happens, that the vacuum energy density that's responsible for the expansion of the universe is so small compared to the estimate of the vacuum energy density in QED in quantum field theory is unclear. So just an open question. Is there any foundational problems with QFT? Are there any alternative way to describe particles and forces in a single framework? Why do we not have particles with spin greater than 2? What kind of systems does the Liouville theory describe? So let me try to answer these questions in turn. So foundational problems with QFT, I don't know, it's are there foundational problems with quantum mechanics? Answer is probably yes. But then we can still, you know, learn what Schrödinger equation is and solve it. And it describes physics pretty well. So I would take also this pragmatic stance that I just want to fill theory. So it may have foundational problems, but we can use it to compute things and predict physics, and it works. So that's why it is an important subject. Then, why do we not have particles with spin greater than 2? So there are two answers to this question. So first of all, there are particles with spin greater than 2, some strongly interacting mesons that have masses like a couple of times larger than protons, and live very, very short fraction of a second. Indeed exist with spins that are bigger than 2. But they are massive particles and they're composite particles, so they're made of quarks and gluons. Another question is why there are no particles of spin greater than 2 that carry forces. So we know that particles that carry electromagnetic force are photons, they have spin 1. Gravitons that carry gravitational force have spin 2. And one can actually show on the very general grounds that massless particles of spin greater than 2 cannot exist. So it is a theorem that's known as Weinberg-Witten theorem. So so technically, the theorem states that they have trivial S matrix. So trivial S matrix means that they don't interact with anything, which is pretty much to say that they don't exist. Then the next question is Liouville theory. So I remind you that this is a two-dimensional scalar field theory with the Lagrangian 1/2 mu phi squared minus mu over b e to the b phi. So what does this theory describe? Well, frankly, I don't know any physical system described by this theory. After all, it's a two-dimensional theory, and we live in four dimensions. But it's a very beautiful mathematical model and can be used to understand conceptual properties of quantum field theory at a very deep level. So first of all, the equations of so there are three reasons why Liouville theory is, mathematics is so nice. So one reason is that the Liouville equation, so which is the equation of motion for the Liouville field, which is d phi, d squared phi, plus mu times the exponential of phi equals 0, it is solvable in quadratures. So it's a second order nonlinear PDE, and yet it has one can write down an explicit solution to this equation. So it is solvable, and this is pretty much unique situation. So there are no other PDEs for which the solution would be known in such an explicit form. And this was known since since very, very long back, since Liouville. So that's why this model is called Liouville field theory. So the second important property of this theory is that it's solvable quantum mechanically. So quantum Liouville theory is also solvable. And it's also a very rare example. We don't know many interacting field theories that have an exact solution. So far what we learned in this course is how to quantize three fields. And generically, if one is given an interacting Lagrangian, one wouldn't know what to do with it. So a spectrum, et cetera, physical quantities wouldn't be computable exactly. In Liouville theory, in principle, one can calculate anything just exactly. And finally, Liouville theory is in fact equivalent to quantum gravity in two dimensions. So it describes uh, 2D quantum gravity. I have no time to explain this in detail, but the basic idea is that in two dimensions, a method can be brought into the diagonal form by coordinate transformations. So there always exist coordinates where the metric is just delta mu nu times some scale factor. And so this scale factor is related to the Liouville field. Its dynamics is described by the Liouville theory. So in so there is always a coordinate system in which the metric is diagonal. So this means that two-dimensional quantum gravity is an exactly solvable model. Okay, so a more general, perhaps mathematical explanation of what spinors actually are and where they come from would be nice. Okay, so where do spinors come from? Well, alternative way to explain them is to consider representation theory of the Poincaré group. And I heard that you have done this in the group theory course. So Poincaré group has representations with spin that is half integer. So it has obvious representations which are vectors. But there are also other representations. And the smallest representation has dimension 2. And this is just the spinor representation. So I mean, since they exist, there are some fields that carry these representations. And these are Dirac fields. So I don't know if it's a good explanation or not. But of course, fields with, as I said, fields with any spin can field theory with any spin can be formulated provided that the field is massive. If the field is massless, then spin has to be smaller or equal than 2. Okay, so let me then continue with the dimensional analysis. And so Yesterday we started to look at the situation where we have some physical quantity B that has dimension A, and then it depends on energy and the coupling constant. And the coupling constant has dimension nu. Then on general grounds, we can write that B is equal to E to the A, and then provided that it can be expanded in the perturbation theory series, the expansion will go in the dimensionless ratio of coupling divided by energy to the power nu. So how to determine this power nu? Well, we need to understand how to count dimensions in an arbitrary Lagrangian. So how is it done? So the basic idea is that the action must be dimensionless. So where it, why is it dimensionless? So action has dimensions of h bar. Because for free particle, the action is dt p q dot, right? So minus L. And so it has the dimension of p dot q. So dimension of s is dimension of p plus dimension q. And this is the dimension of h bar, which we set to 1. So we set h bar to 1, so its dimension is 0. So the action must be dimensionless. But on the other hand, in field theory, the action is the integral over 4 volume of the Lagrangian density.
Hamiltonian
in the first expression. L. So the Lagrangian density therefore has dimension 4, because so the action is dimensionless. D4x has dimension minus 4. Because each x has dimension minus 1 in units of energy. And from that we conclude that the Lagrangian must have dimension plus 4. So if we have a field theory, so let's apply this simple observation to the cases that we have already studied, namely to free fields. So for the Klein-Gordon field, the action, okay, the Lagrangian is, it contains the kinetic term, right, d phi squared phi. So we can write that the dimension of the Lagrangian is equal to dimension of derivative squared plus dimension of phi squared. So this is equal to 4. This is equal to 2, because derivative is d over dx, so it has dimension of inverse of x, and there are two derivatives, and plus 2 times the dimension of phi. So we conclude that phi has dimension 1.
Question?
Yes?
Why did you say that the dimension of d4x is minus 4?
Because the dimension of dx is the same as the dimension of x.
Okay.
and the dimension of x is minus 1. So because we, in our units, x has inverse dimension of momentum, because we set h bar to 1. So momentum has the same dimension as mass. So scales as one of the energy. Then Dirac field. The Lagrangian contains the term psi bar gamma mu d mu psi. So this has dimension 4. There is one derivative and two fields. So we conclude that psi has dimension 3/2. And finally, electromagnetic field. So its Lagrangian is minus 1 quarter F mu nu square. So from which we conclude that F mu nu has dimension 2. But on the other hand, F mu nu is d mu a nu minus d nu a mu. So the potentials have dimension 1. So knowing the dimensions of basic fields, we can figure out what the dimension of an arbitrary operator is. So generic field theory is defined by the Lagrangian that's the sum of local operators. So we can write that the Lagrangian is equal to the pre-Lagrangian plus sum of couplings times local operators. So the dimension of any operator is just the sum of dimensions of all constituent fields plus the number of derivatives. And we conclude that the total dimension should be equal to 4. So the dimension of the coupling plus the dimension of the operator should combine to 4. So the dimension of the coupling is then equal to 4 minus dimension of the field. So from this formula, you see that dimensions of couplings tend to be negative, because you say that each field has positive dimension, derivatives have positive dimension. So if we add more and more fields or derivatives, we grow the dimension of operator, and therefore the couplings will have smaller and smaller dimension. I mean, they will start to have negative dimension at some point. So generic complicated operator will have dimension larger than 4, and the coupling will have negative dimensions in units of energy. That fact has a very profound, well, simple as it is, it has profound consequences for quantum field theory, just for dimensional analysis in quantum field theory. Because the way we do perturbation theory really depends on the sign of the dimension of the coupling. So here, nu is what is the dimension of the coupling. And then we can distinguish three cases. So uh, So case one is when the dimension of the coupling, that is our nu,
when it is positive. So such couplings are called relevant.
And accordingly, the operator is called relevant. So typically, so relevant couplings mean that the expansion goes in the negative powers of energy. Right. So the condition of so then interactions are weak. So relevant interactions are weak as long as energy is large. So this means that if we start at large energies or small distances, then everything is okay. We can approximate the dynamics by that of free fields, and then, I mean, interactions will produce some small corrections on top of that. But usually we are interested in the physics at low energies and large distances. So like. Imagine that we want to study molecular physics using quantum field theory. So this doesn't make sense in the real world. There are much simpler methods, right? And this is because the QD coupling is dimensionless, so it produces only very, very small corrections when we take into account interactions. So, therefore, the physics at so quantum field theory, of course, is important only when distances are very, very small, at least in this in quantum electrodynamics. When we go to larger distances, we can make approximations and use first ordinary quantum mechanics and then classical physics. Now, in the world where the interactions are relevant, this wouldn't work. So in that situation, the long distance physics, so like molecular scale physics, will be described by quantum field theory, and interactions will be very, very important. So this is the situation, this is the case where we cannot neglect interactions, and physics becomes very, very strongly coupled at long distance scales. So then there is a marginal case where the dimension of the coupling is equal to zero. So this coupling is called marginal. Or the operator is called marginal also. And you might think that this case is really not important because, I mean, if you're given some random number, there is a very small probability that it will be exactly zero. But the point is that dimension is not really a random number. It has I mean, it has good chances to be integer, right? So you see, or half integer, actually integer, because normally the operator has at least two Fermion fields, so it has to be an odd. I mean, it should be contain two Fermions at least to be a scalar, and then the other fields have integer dimensions. So normally operators have integer dimensions, and so integer of course has chances to be zero. Now in quantum field theory, it turns out that there are corrections to this number, so it actually a little bit depends on interactions. But anyway, this is therefore truly marginal couplings almost never exist. But in this, when we do just simple counting, then many couplings will turn out to be marginal. And then the question of strength of interaction is just a question of numbers, right? Because the a marginal coupling is a number. It's just a numeric constant. So it can be either weak or strong, depending on the on its numerical value. So marginal interactions can be both weak and strong. Depending on the numerical value of the coupling. But independently of the scale. And finally, we have the third case where the dimension of the coupling is negative. So these couplings are called irrelevant. And the operators are called also irrelevant. So in this case, the expansion goes really in positive powers of energy. So if you are interested in the physics at large distances or low energies, then we are guaranteed to, at sufficiently small energies, the corrections due to interactions will be always small. So at large distances, the irrelevant operators do not matter. So in the sense that, well, they produce corrections that are systematically under control. So the accuracy becomes better and better at lower and lower energies. Now the question is what happens, so the irrelevant interactions are weak at low energies. So the question is what happens if we gradually raise the energy and then we at some point we will reach the regime where interactions are no longer small. Now the point is this, that this usually signals that our description of physics is breaks down, so it's incorrect. And we should replace it by something else. Well, the reason for that is, which is not the case here. So field theories with relevant couplings are usually OK field theories. But one has to understand them non-perturbatively, and it's, the interactions are generally strong in them. So in the case of irrelevant couplings, interactions may not become strong at all at higher energies. And simply the description that signals that the description lacks some degrees of freedom that are missing. So how to understand this? Well, the point is that in a generic field theory, there will be a limited number of relevant operators. So which is easy to see, because I mean, when we build operators from fields, well, we may add another field or add another derivative, and that will only raise the dimension of operator, which means that it will diminish the dimension of the coupling. So the number of operators which have dimensions smaller than 4 is always limited. So there is always a very few relevant interactions that can be present in the Lagrangian. And moreover, if we impose symmetry, some of these operators may be forbidden by symmetry. So and the same is true for marginal. To some extent, it's also true for marginal operators. So certainly in 4 dimensions, that's the true statement. So the number of marginal and relevant operators is always fine. On the contrary, yes.
Okay, one question. Why cannot we have operators with negative energy, negative dimension?
Well, because an operator is a product of fields taken at some point, and each field has positive dimension. Then one can take derivatives as well inside the operator. But that also gives positive contribution to the dimension. So dimensions cannot be negative, just the construction. And so most of operators that we can build belong to this class, so they are irrelevant. And then if you have some irrelevant coupling in the Lagrangian, there is a coupling of dimension smaller than 0, we can always write this as some dimensionless coupling and then divide it by scale M and then the operator. So we just took out the scale from the coupling. So J bar is now dimensionless. And so this simply means that that at energies comparable to M, field theory doesn't make sense anymore, this particular field theory. Why? Well, because we can add an arbitrary, infinitely many operators, Then, okay, so there, by again by the same dimensional analysis, they will be suppressed by the same scale. And at this scale, all of this infinite number of operators will suddenly become important. So we simply cannot control this, this multitude of couplings. And so this just means that the scale is fundamentally some fundamental scale at which our description is turns out to be wrong.
You know,
the first example is
the
DVD.
It's kind of, it started out on Roman signs, but now it's.
So let us consider this case again, quantum electrodynamics. And we know that the coupling is dimensionless, so it's marginal. Let's derive it from our considerations. Here, so we know that the interaction Lagrangian in QED is minus E times A mu psi bar comma mu psi. So let's compute the dimension of A psi bar gamma mu psi, which is just to count the fields in the operator. So A has dimension 1, and psi has dimension 3 halves. So in total, we get 4. So this is a marginal operator. And the coupling is dimensionless. Now, there is a there is a little twist to this sort of argument. Yes.
It should be 0 or 1.
Oh, yes, sure. It's 0. So there is. So to this, this estimates, of course, assume nothing about the coefficients in perturbation theory, right? So this dn bar. So, or better to say, we just assume that these coefficients are numbers of order 1. In practice, they're not numbers of order 1. They're small numerical factors that appear. So in particular, so here we know that, so naively we think that expansion parameter is E. Well, upon the thought, we can realize that it's actually E squared. Now, E squared numerically is something like 0.1, which is reasonably small. So we may expect that corrections will be on the order of 1%. But in practice, the expansion parameter is not that. So in reality, the expansion parameter is alpha divided by 4 pi, which is E squared divided by 16 pi squared, and which is something like 6 times 10 to the minus 4. So the corrections are 1 part per mil. QED, the perturbation theory, is really, really very good approximation. So the second example is lambda pi 4 theory. So this will be the model on which we will exemplify all concrete tools how to do the perturbation theory. So now, let's see what is this the sign of the coupling. What is the dimension of the coupling? So dimension of the operator pi to the 4 is 4. And so in this case, coupling is also dimensionless. So this is also marginal, the marginal case. And finally, let us consider Fermi theory of quick interactions. So the interaction Lagrangian of Fermi theory is something like, well, it's current times current interaction, gamma mu 1 minus gamma phi over 2 psi bar gamma mu 1 minus gamma phi over 2 psi. Where this psi is actually different fields, so it's electrons, leptons, neutrinos, quarks, etc. But important point is that the dimension of this operator is 3/2 multiplied by 4, which is 6. So the dimension of the Fermi coupling is actually minus 2. So this operator is irrelevant. But this is one example from which we can see that irrelevant doesn't mean not important. So irrelevant interactions are, sometimes they are useful. It just means that we can use Fermi Lagrangian to compute at low energies. So at low energies, it's a good approximation. And also, it means that at low energies, weak interactions are extremely weak. So it's actually, the name weak interactions come from the fact that they are very, very weak. And the physical reason for that is that the coupling constant is very small. Now, it also determines the scale at which perturbation theory should break down. So G Fermi is 1.166 times 10 to the minus 5 GeV to the minus 2. And so this means that at energies of order 100 GeV or a little bit more, Fermi theory is no longer a good approximation. And indeed, one might think that at this energies, weak interaction suddenly becomes strong. But in practice, this is not what happens. When irrelevant interactions, the scale at which irrelevant interactions could become strong really means that at this scale the theory should be modified. And in this particular case, there is a more fundamental Glasher-Weinberg-Salam model, which replaces Fermi theory at energies of 100 GeV and larger. And the interactions in Glasher-Weinberg-Salam model are not strong at this scale. But they can simply cannot be approximated anymore but by Fermi interactions. So, which is always the case with irrelevant operators. So there's some scale beyond which we simply cannot. We need to replace the field theory by something else. Okay, so do you have any questions? Yes.
What is the topic called gravity on this?
So gravity has so the coupling constant of gravity is G Newton, which has dimension minus 2. And so one can introduce the mass scale associated with the gravitational constant, which is just 1 over, so which is called the Planck mass. And the Planck mass is, so Planck mass is something like 10 to the 18 GeV, 18 or 19. So there is some numerical factor here. And so this tells us that gravity makes sense, I mean, Einstein gravity makes sense up to energies of this order. Beyond that, we have to replace it by something else. What else we really don't know. But indeed, gravity, so this dimension counting shows that gravitational interactions are irrelevant. And they are indeed very, gravity is a very, very weak force, which goes a little bit against our everyday experience. But well, the reason that we still perceive gravity in everyday life is that gravity cannot be, it's universally attractive, so there is no anti-gravity. So say electromagnetic force, which is stronger by, I don't know, 40 orders of magnitude, can be screened. So there are negative and positive charges. So electromagnetic interactions are actually, I mean, so they're just screened. So they're neutral. I mean, basically, the matter is on average neutral, and so it doesn't interact very strongly electromagnetically. That's why gravity survives at large distances. Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
Is there some natural explanation for gravity having only one sign of charges, not having positive and negative?
Well, there is a quantum field theory explanation. I don't know how natural it is. So forces mediated by spin 0, spin 2, and spin 4 particles, if they existed, would be universally attractive. And forces mediated by spin 1, spin 3, spin 5 particles can be either attractive or repulsive, depending on the sign of charge. So example of the force that is mediated by scalar particles, to some approximation, is the strong nuclear force. And it's also universally attractive. So that's why nuclei can contain both protons and nucleons, so that both still attract to one another, despite they have opposite electric charges. So, and this is because this force, at least at large distances, it is mediated by scalar particles, by quarks. Electromagnetism, which is mediated by vector particles, can be repulsive or attractive. Gravity is universally attractive, and so on. Any other questions? Yes.
from this point of view, then all physical theories have to be asymptotically free, like all complete theories. Or
theories that make sense on their own at any energy. Well, this should belong to this case, and asymptotically free theories indeed belongs to this case. So this is marginal coupling that, due to quantum corrections, becomes actually relevant. So indeed, in the formal sense, theory with relevant operators can be made. I mean, we can make sense of it on all energy scales, provided that we can solve it in the infrared where energy is small, because it doesn't have problems in large energies. Okay, so if there are no further questions, thank you, and then have a nice weekend. See you on Monday.